This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Recollections Radio, Monday morning tea time is now all about sharing memories with you, old and new, of life in Dunedin.
Bringing you stories, interviews and music from times past and inviting you to share your memories with us.
Presented by Jill Bowie and Kay Mercer, the team behind Dunedin Public Library's Scattered Seeds Archive. Thanks to generous funding by the New Zealand Libraries Partnership Project.
Recollections Radio, Monday mornings at 11 on 105.4 FM and 1575 AM.
Morena koutou.
Hello, morena.
What a beautiful day.
Isn't it gorgeous?
Yeah. So nice. I feel like it's spring.
It does feel like it, doesn't it?
Yeah. And it makes me much happier.
I spent the weekend in Alexandra with frosty mornings and gorgeous sunny days. I wrapped myself up warm and sat on a deck chair and read a book in the sun.
Oh, that's the way.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. Awesome. Oh, well, what have I been doing this week? I have been working on the theatre project this week, which has been really exciting. It's right up my alley, that is. So we've been looking at talking to some wonderful people who work in the theatre or have worked in the theatre for many decades. More about that another day, because we'll have... We're going to dedicate, actually, September to Theatre Month, so you'll find out more about the project then, but just suffice to say that at the moment we've been looking through our wonderful collection of old theatre programmes and putting some of those onto the Scattered Seeds Archive, which you can look at on dunedin.recollect.govt. What else have we been doing? Lots of interest in our Joe Brown dances.
Yeah, I met someone on Friday, and so she had some amazing memories. It's so cool.
Fantastic.
To actually hear from stories from people that were there. Mm. So, yes, we'll put those on the archive soon.
Indeed. Mm. So, yes, we've got lots of people to follow up with that. Really looking forward to talking to people about their memories of the Joe Brown dances and other dances. We've had interest from Port Chalmers and from St Kilda and from the Outram dances. Mm. So we're looking forward to speaking to people about those. But if you have memories, do get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. library@dcc.govt.nz, or you can call us on 03474 3690, nearly forgot. Or just pop into a local library and have a chat to one of the librarians there and say you'd like to speak to Jill or Kay about the project.
Sad news
last week.
Yeah, so Olivia Newton-John died last week, aged 73. But I thought I would, instead of being sad, I would celebrate her life and just some of the interesting facts of her. So did you know that her maternal grandfather was the 1954 Nobel Prize winner in physics?
No.
So for his fundamental research in quantum mechanics. So, and her father was an MI5 officer on the Enigma project at Bletchley Park, who took Rudolf Hess into custody during World War II. Yeah.
Wow.
And so her first, the title track of her first album, If Not For You, which was released in 1971, was written by Bob Dylan. Uh-huh. And 1974, she represented the United Kingdom in the Eurovision Song Contest.
She represented the UK?
She was born in the UK. So, yeah,
born
in Cambridge.
Right.
Yeah, and so, but she lost. She came fourth that year. The winning entry was Waterloo by ABBA, so you couldn't really beat that.
So she was in good company, yeah. Fair enough.
So she had 26 studio albums, 6 live albums, 14 compilations, and 6 soundtracks.
Amazing.
In her list discography. Yeah, and so 1981, her most successful studio album was the double platinum album Physical, which had the great video with the exercising.
And the leggings.
Yep. Yes, and she made headbands a fashion accessory outside of the gym.
Yes, so. I blame her for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can forgive her.
Yeah.
And she's worked with one of my favourite bands. Slash people, Electric Light Orchestra.
Yes, from the movie soundtrack Xanadu, which the film was a critical failure, but the soundtrack was certified double platinum and scored 5 top 20 singles on the Billboard Hot 100.
Amazing.
And so let's play one of them now, Xanadu.
Xanadu, and I dare you to join in with the chorus.
It's high.
We can't.
Oh, it's nice to think of Olivia Newton-John being up in the stars now, isn't it?
Turning into a brilliant beam of light like she did in the movie. Yeah. Aww. What a high note that
is. I know.
Incredible.
I know. I don't know whether it was electronically enhanced, but she certainly had a wonderful range
Amazing.
Yeah.
So wanted to be here.
So that was lovely to celebrate her.
Yes.
And thank you for those facts. That's good. And now then, I had the very good fortune to talk to one of the rare treasures at the library quite recently, Ms. Kathleen McCarthy, who is our bookbinder. She is responsible for protecting all the books, putting the wonderful coverings on so they get a really good long lifespan when they're being handled by so many people, but also for preparing the exhibitions. Mm. She and her partner in crime, Jasmine, prepare the supports for the books and the various exhibits, and they do an absolutely amazing job making it all look magical and perfect. And also she does an incredible job repairing books, whether they're just everyday books that get used in the collection just to extend the life, or they could be the very, very precious articles we've got in our heritage collection. She's responsible for making sure that they are carefully looked after. So she does a fantastic job, and it was really interesting talking to her about her work. The main reason we got to talk to her was because she had a real interest in bookshops, Dunedin bookshops, and she actually suggested our project, Dunedin Bookshops. So it's thanks to Kathleen that that we did that. So here, without further ado, sit back, put your feet up, have a cup of tea, and enjoy this interview with Kathleen McCarthy. So it's recording now. Whirring around, so I'm going to read this formal piece to you. Kathleen, before we go any further, I want to confirm that you understand that this material is being recorded for archival purposes primarily, for the Dunedin Public Library's He Pura Pura Marara Scattered Seeds Digital Archive. The recording will be held in the He Pura Pura Marara Scattered Seeds Digital Archive, www.dunedin.recollect.co.nz, which I'm going to call the archive because that's very long. A copy of the recording may be held on repository in digital form. That's the file I mentioned.
Yes.
By Dunedin Public Libraries. Material held in the archive, which is the online version, is freely accessible by the general public as specified in the written recording agreement we have provided for you to sign and which you have kindly signed today. Are you happy with that, and are you willing to continue with the recording?
I am.
Thank you, Kathleen. So we'll just start. Can you tell me a wee bit about yourself? Did you grow up in Dunedin, for example?
I grew up on the Otago Peninsula, mostly at Broad Bay. And at that time, Broad Bay was quite rural, so rural, in fact, that the Teachers College used to use us for a country placement normal school.
Uh-huh. Give me an example.
We didn't even have a access to intermediate. We went right through to Standard 6 and then were thrown at high school. So it was a very rural upbringing. Very country life.
Sounds idyllic.
Very free when I think about it, untrammelled.
Yes, and you were free to run about and play as children.
To play in the harbour, roam the paddocks. Wonderful. And then I had high school in Dunedin, and I then trained as a teacher and shifted to Invercargill for a good number of years.
Okay, so you have an educational background. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In Invercargill I taught for a little bit, and then I moved to the voluntary sector and worked with people with disabilities.
Wonderful, And when did you first become a bookbinder? What got you interested in that? Tell us.
Well,
about that.
In the 90s, with money getting tighter, the voluntary agencies were having a hard time and my job disappeared beneath my feet, so I was looking around for a job. Bit of history there, back in the days of classified jobs wanted ads, and I saw one for a bookbinding assistant at the Otago University.
Exciting, yes.
And my first reaction was, oh my goodness, they still do that. So I went along to a local publishing firm in Invercargill called Craig Print, and they had a bindery, and the lovely binder there said I could go and visit. Are we eternally grateful to him? Because I went in and I had an immediate, oh, so this is where I'm meant to be.
An epiphany moment.
Yeah, really, really.
Wonderful.
I did not get that job, but I kept my eyes peeled, and a few months later the one at Dunedin Public Library was advertised, and I was fortunate enough to get that. So
when, what year was that?
It was 1995.
Uh-huh. And was that a new department for the library, or had it been?
No, the bindery had been going in one form or other since the 1930s, book mending, and then with Cess Davies moving in, it became more of a bindery. They had the Murray Miller years, and he really upped the notch a bit to conservation work. He attended some conservation courses in Australia as well, and eventually moved to Australia to take up a conservation job in Canberra. So we've had quite a history of binding in New Zealand.
Yes.
James Dixon was the head foreman binder after him, and he was sadly killed at Arimoana.
So that was
a big shock. Yes. And then Philip Gillespie, David Steadman, and then I was lucky enough to get it, because during my earlier time, was lucky enough to get an adult apprenticeship here at the bindery and received my trade qualification.
Fabulous. So you learned your craft doing the job.
Yep.
Wonderful.
The apprenticeship was quite intense. It was 3 years on and off, and a lot of private study. I estimated at one time I was spending about 10 hours a week just studying, and several block courses in Auckland at the trade training area there.
Yes.
So it was.
Is the work you do for the library different to a standard bookbinder's, do you think?
I've visited lots of bindries since 1995, and I couldn't say that any two of them were the same.
Ah, right. So it's quite unique to the library.
Yeah, a bit like the bookshops we're going to be talking about.
Yes.
Everyone has a different flavour and a different emphasis. Mm. I think I've been lucky to work bookbinding here, because I can't think of another bindery that I've visited, with the possible exception of Auckland, where they tend to have a bindery and a conservation lab, where there's such a range of things to be done.
Yes.
I find it just immensely satisfying that I can be trying to get crayon out of a children's picture book in the morning and working on a 15th century manuscript in the afternoon, not with the same tools.
All an equally labour of love, I guess.
And having a certain degree of access to the special collections with the exhibitions has just been a real highlight. And led me to lots of other interesting experiences. Through the job, I was able to attend a week-long course on medieval inks and pigments.
So exciting,
I actually got to learn how all those beautiful colours that I work with in the special collections were actually made, and had a go at making some myself. So.
And that's vital for the curation and the preservation
to,
of it.
To understand the colours and how they're made.
Yeah. So we are very lucky to have you, if I may say so.
I was very lucky to do it.
But the library itself is very lucky to have such an amazing collection of unique pieces, including the medieval manuscripts, unique, I believe.
Yeah, the range of it is quite mind-boggling, really.
It is,
Lots of little collections that the public might not necessarily know about unless they've got a specific interest. The Walt Whitman collection springs to mind.
Yes. Which is how wonderful that we have our exhibitions so regularly, and people are able to come and view those items that aren't.
And when you think about the range of those exhibitions, everything from Sunday school through to autographed letters. And our current one is just so visually exciting and a real celebration.
Māori legends, it's a beautiful. It, as you say, it covers such a broad range and across the world, really. Items from across the world, across history.
So, that reminds me of one called Departures and Arrivals, which really did look at across the world how people came to New Zealand.
Fabulous. Such a unique experience for someone to be able to work with those.
Yeah, it is.
And you have quite a huge input into the exhibitions that we run because you prepare all of the items for exhibitions.
Yeah.
So take great care of
again, I think in the bindery, Desmond and I are really lucky to see all sides of the exhibition. We see right from the very start when the first mock-ups are done of what are going to be in the cases, and curators are very kind and listening to us.
It's exciting seeing it all come together.
It
and
is.
Then that final, you must be so proud when the exhibition opens to see how it all looks.
Nervous.
Because it's theoretical until that point, isn't it?
A personal anecdote was that the night before our first exhibition, I had this nightmare that as the mayor declared the gallery open, all the supports collapsed, revealing that they'd been made out of photocopy paper box. and that sort of introduced a feeling of unease that's never quite left. but it is really satisfying to give the curator the exhibition they had in their mind.
Yes.
Because they always have a story to tell and
Absolutely.
A vision in their head, and to help and facilitate that process is wonderful.
Incredible. So you've been involved in all of the exhibitions, have you, from the start?
Yes, right from the first one.
What was the first one?
It was a celebration of the collection.
Yeah.
I remember it was curated by Ian Stewart, and I can see the poster, but the name is gone from my mind.
Ah, well, listener, that would be something for
you
to
look up. And none of us had ever done an exhibition before, and it was an opening of the gallery as well,
so it was
quite an event.
Yes.
We all got dressed up, I remember.
Exciting.
And because we'd never done it before, or some of the bindery staff had never made exhibition supports before, so it was a real learning curve. And it was a lovely time too. I remember we actually worked overtime several nights to get it done in time, and working together on such an important project, and we sort of had pizza on the balcony for tea as a break, and it was a lovely sharing time.
Wonderful. And you're kind of renowned in the library for being very... I won't say parsimonious, but you're very careful with materials, and you make sure that you use them very carefully and that they're all used to their maximum.
I didn't know I had that reputation.
Well, you do with me. I don't know if it's others.
Yes.
Yeah. So you make use of every single piece of card, and nothing goes to waste. Yeah.
Well, I've always been a paper and card junkie from way back, so it's... a precious resource to me.
It was
quite hard when I started to see offcuts being binned. and of course these days the materials that we use quite a lot is sourced from overseas, so the freight charges are just horrendous.
So you use them as carefully as possible, naturally.
Yes. Or as appropriately as possible, perhaps.
I think so, yes. So talking about books now, have you always been interested in books? Have you always been a reader?
I was trying to think if there had been a time when I didn't read, and there must have been, because I can still remember, before I went to primary school, the mental thing of realising that I could make sense of the words myself.
Mm.
I was familiar with them. And it was Baby's first book, a Ladybird book.
Yes.
And it strikes me, looking at it now, that the books we had back then were amazingly not contemporary and not New Zealand.
Mm.
Apart from school journal, when I got to school, there was very little contemporary and very little New Zealand content. But I can actually remember that physical... Oh my goodness, of being able to read it myself. So I guess, from four, I've been a reader.
And you've loved books and stories. Dunedin's had a really healthy relationship with books, I'd say, because I was fascinated to learn that the Philip Lang came over with the Library of Books. You know, it was important
Scottish learning tradition.
Absolutely. So right from then, they understood that books were going to be valuable to the community. So over the last 120 years, it's been a passion of Dunedin residents to have books available to them. And bookshops opened quite early on in the piece after European settlement. I won't say you went right back to the Lang, of course, but what are your earliest memories of bookshops in Dunedin?
Well, my first book purchase experience was Terry's in Dunedin and George Street.
Right.
And I was there with my grandmother, and she said that I might choose a book to buy, which was an interesting new concept that I took to. And I still have the book. It's Mr. Rabbit and Mr. Fox.
You've got the original book?
Exciting. Yes, and it's still got the Terry's stamp on the inside end paper.
Yeah.
And it, Blackie's Easy to Read book series. And it must have been easy to read because I can remember wanting to read it to anybody in my orbit who sat still for one moment. And I think my great aunts listened to it several times. They must have got totally sick of it.
Oh, it's lovely that you wanted to read to them and not the other way around.
Oh, it was the excitement of the words making sense, I think.
Wonderful.
So I remember from way back then that I would have been middle school.
Yeah. Where was Terry's?
Terry's was down in George Street.
Yeah,
I think it was the block before Knox Church on the town belt side of the road.
Right,
but seem to remember from back then that it had two doors, so it must have been quite a sizable shop.
Yeah. What are your memories of that shop? What are your impressions of the shop?
Just books everywhere.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like a library. It had a quite an open display, as I recall it.
Yeah.
But I don't remember much about the layout of the shop. I just remember that it had lots of books, and the thrill of being able to buy one and take one home was brilliant.
And it had a distinct new book feel. Was it new books only? Or did
As I recall, it was new books. Mm. And it later amalgamated and became Terry's Beggs and sold musical instruments as well, which is quite interesting. Obviously concentrated on things that satisfy the soul.
Indeed. I love that combination, music and books. I think it's wonderful. Yeah, fabulous.
And from there, I guess my next dominant memory of bookshops in Dunedin would be Whitcomb and Tombs in Princes Street.
All right. Whereabouts was that one?
It was in the middle of the block, again on the town belt side of Princes Street, between Darling Street and Rattray Street.
Right, yes.
And it was the most magical shop. It was sort of on the way between my bus stop and my high school, so I quite often missed the first bus home. You asked what Terry's was like. I can remember the feeling inside Whitcomb and Tombs more, possibly because I was older. But there's a lovely anecdote told in the book about New Zealand booksellers about a young man working at Whitcomb and Tombs, and he goes to his floor manager and he's worried because there's a woman who comes in once a week and she just reads bits out of books and never buys anything. And he's worried about what he should be doing.
Mm.
And his manager says, "Fetch her a chair."
Good man.
and Whitcomb and Tombs, as I remember it in the early 70s, was still like that.
Mm.
It was just such a welcoming shop. It had books at the main entrance, just everywhere, and then you sort of went round to curve to the left and there was a huge area of magazines. They must have had a bit of a clean out in the 70s because they had the most magnificent sale, not only of books but of all sorts of stationery items, And I remember I bought a corked bottle of Stevens ink in a violet colour and wrote nothing but purple prose for several years afterwards. And at the same sale, I bought a box of sealing wax, which was a present for my father because he used it in his lapidary work. So.
Oh, right.
It's used to hold the stone on a dope stick. So.
Right.
That was a real find. So Wickham and Tombs would be my next dominant.
Mm. And again, that was new books.
Yes, yeah. It was. Mm. But that's probably a nice segue into my actual book buying career, because most of the books that I could afford from that time on were second hand.
Mm.
And the first book I remember buying with my own earned money, I bought again with my grandmother at a place called Caversham Traders in Caversham. It was a really well-known second-hand shop. The building is still there, and it was originally in the 19th century a hotel.
Oh, gosh, right.
It's the front part of the building that's now used as the dog groomers.
Right, yes. Yeah.
So I bought a copy of Piers Schilling Cyclopedia. I bought it because we didn't have one, and I thought every house should have a pair.
Absolutely.
And because it's got a very funny cartoon in the back of a very dirty, physically dirty, disreputable old man writing to Piers and saying, 2 years ago I used your soap, since then I have used no other, which appealed to me. When I got it home and waved it proudly at my father, he looked at it and he said, "Do you know what you've bought?" I said, "Yes, it's a Piers Schilling Cyclopedia." He said, "Look at the front." And inside the front cover was written Milford Sound 1902, and it's got Donald Sutherland's personal stamp on it. So every time I go to Milford, I go to Donald Sutherland's cairn and tell him I'm still looking after his Piers Cyclopedia. So that was my first and very lucky book binding.
And isn't that wonderful about secondhand bookshops? You can find sometimes the provenance of where the books come from, and it's such a wonder. It's part of its story.
And working with the exhibitions too, their association is always the biggest thrill.
And I can say you've got a beautiful copy. Well, it is the copy in front of you.
Yes.
It's carefully preserved.
Very tatty. I don't really want to fix it because that's the condition it was in when I bought it. Read to bits by Donald Sutherland and the Mackenzie family.
Yes. And there's a dedication inside.
No, that's just Donald's signature there.
Right.
And E. Mackenzie. So it's dated Milford Sound 1902 and 1915. So no other notes in it, unfortunately, but a real treasure.
Yeah.
So I've never been quite that lucky since, but it did sort of start me on a career of buying books. And I didn't have a lot of money, so second-hand books was the way to go. And a little bit of Dunedin forgotten history, I suppose, was that there was a second-hand shop in Stewart Street in the block just below the Octagon. And it was a fascinating street in those days. They had all sorts of specialist shops. There was Eclipse Radio, a lovely, lovely shop called Ken's for Pens, which is probably responsible for my fountain pen collection. And opposite those, there was the second-hand shop, which was pretty run-of-the-mill second-hand shop, except downstairs in a cellar, there were stacks of ancient books. And they were uniformly moralistic and mawkish sentiment, but I could afford them. They were mostly 5 and 10 cents each. Probably late Victorian, Edwardian, and snapped up as vintage these days. Mm. But mostly I remember that the cellar had bare earth walls You wouldn't even be allowed down the stairs by health and safety these days, but I haunted it because, you know, you could buy a book for 10 cents. It was lovely.
Must have had quite the atmosphere.
Yes. Oh, there were sort of bare beams and bare earth and cobwebs. And I think the man who owned the shop was as surprised anybody would want to go down there and buy anything.
That probably must strike horror in your heart now, knowing what damage the books must have come to down there.
Yes, it never occurred to me at the time, and I don't have any of them still, but if they were in existence, they probably would still have that deep earth cellar smell to them.
We might be going down to rescue them, I think.
So those are my early memories. Yeah.
Did you have any particular favourites that you haunted?
Well, they sort of tended to come later. And I had sort of a circuit I used to do. I think from the 70s, the mecca would have to be Bob Staples.
Oh, yes. I've seen quite a few of his bookmarks.
Yes.
Because we have a bookmarks collection in the archive, yeah.
Yes, I'm working with the Ralph Holtery donation at the moment, and I came across a book exchange card from Bob Staples the other day. Yeah. But Mr. Staples was such a gentleman, and I couldn't afford to buy something there, but like the Whitcomb and Tombs story, they never seemed to mind you looking.
Yes.
And they were so good at ordering books as well. The only actual purchase I remember from there was a copy of the Cranks recipe book, the first health food vegetarian restaurants in London.
Oh, gosh.
And they produced a recipe book. And many years later, when I was fortunate enough to get to London, I made a point of going to the Cranks restaurant and sitting down and having food that I'd seen photographed in that book that was ordered specially for me by Bob Staples. I remember he had a strict policy that he only sold books, no magazines, no cards, except at Christmas he sold cards for Save the Children.
Oh, right. So he was quite the purist.
Yes. Yeah. So
it makes a difference, doesn't it, when the person who runs the bookshop is themselves a lover of books.
Yeah.
And that's almost more important than selling them. Yeah.
It was important, I think, to be able to give readers the books they wanted.
Yes.
It was a strong sense of service rather than a commodity, I feel.
Indeed.
And so that would be the ones that shines out.
Mm.
And then I used to, when I lived in Invercargill, spend my first days back in Dunedin when I visited, going around the bookshops, and I remember there was a London bookshop at that time, a long narrow shop in George Street selling mostly remaindered material, and you could pick up the most marvellous books there. So that was one that I remember distinctly. And Whitcomb and Tombs had become Whitcalls by that time.
Oh, right. Yes.
And a slightly different flavour to it from the shop that I remembered. And then when I shifted back to Dunedin, as well as those shops, there was the University Bookshop and Hindman's.
Oh, yes.
Now, Hindman's were at the bottom of our escalator.
That's
down
right.
From the plaza.
Right next to the library, yeah.
Just at the bottom, very, very dangerous, just being right so close down there, at the bottom of the escalator.
And in terms of you might spend your money, you mean, not in terms of health and safety.
You couldn't walk past the door. You sort of got sucked in. It was an L-shaped shop, as I recall. Went round the corner at the back.
So was that where the Scottish shop was, or is that the other side?
From memory, it was the left-hand side of the escalator when you're going down. But, you know, this was 1995. It's a wee while ago.
Yeah.
And I think they were the first publishers of Alison Holst's
really?
Books. And I have a memory
not sure how accurate it is, that they may have sort of ceased business as a bookseller so they could concentrate on publishing Alison Holst's books.
That's interesting, they were a publisher and a bookseller.
I don't know what else they published. So we were well served, and then there was another little shop in Princess Street that did a lot of bulk remaindered books as well. I tend to focus on the cheaper end of the scale. And I loved upstairs at the University Bookshop.
That's always been a favourite.
So that's a trot around the bookshops that I remember.
What was it about them that drew you to them? Was it just that you love books so much, or was it the place itself?
I think metaphorically it's all the windows. You can see into other people's thoughts and lives, and see into how to do things, and see into other worlds. It's just the opportunity for expansion.
Yeah.
One of my favourite quotes is from A.C. Grayling, and I want it as my epitaph. He once said, "To read is to fly."
It is, isn't it?
And I think that the bookshops give you wings.
Yes, it does. And the freedom and release.
Yes, it's
every day. Yeah.
And Kim Hill once said that she liked Bark because he made her excited and calmed her down at the same time. And I think readings like that, it can either, you know, stimulate you to new and exciting things, or it can be a balm and a restful
something
piece.
To soothe you. Indeed, yeah. I noticed from lots of other things people have said is that a lot of the bookshops had real characters running them. Do you remember any of the people that ran them?
Not really. I tend to remember the people who run the bookshops now more, but
yeah.
I guess then I was really focused on the books, though. The atmosphere at Wickham and Tombs and at Bob Staples would have been a direct result of the people who ran them. So I guess it's why you remember those as places you wanted to go and places you wanted to be. But I never really got to know the people running the bookshops.
It does seem to me that the characters in the bookshops add to the character of the city. It's sort of the bookshops almost make the flavour of the city as people come into it.
Yes,
I think that can be still true today.
Yes, I think so.
And certainly with the second-hand bookshops, at least.
Well, if I'm allowed to mention specific local ones that are still surviving, I think there was quite a different atmosphere between all the second-hand bookshops, and you could walk into any single one of them and know where you were. And I guess my favourite bookshop at the moment, Dead Souls, the atmosphere is very much a result of the artistic ability and the owner.
Creative.
It's a very satisfying shop to be in, even if you don't have a purpose for going there.
That really sums it up, doesn't it?
It's a satisfying, welcoming, inspiring place to be.
A reason to visit. Makes them a destination, doesn't it?
And you can always pick up a bookmark as well.
Absolutely, yes.
It's hard to disassociate the bookshops from the proprietor.
Indeed. And that was kind of the point I was making. A lot of them, I get the sense that some people might visit because of the experience they would have, even if they didn't buy anything. It was just a place that they enjoyed being.
Yes, I think on a wet Sunday, if you've got nothing to do, there's always a bookshop to think of.
Yeah.
I can think of at least one example of a bookshop that I really didn't like going to because of the feeling of the place. It obviously is coloured a lot by the proprietor.
Indeed. I won't ask you to name that one.
No, I'm not.
No.
I'm not even going to say whether it was in Dunedin.
No, quite so. So you talked about the beautiful Pears Encyclopedia that you managed to pick up as being one of your literary treasures. Were there any other special books that you enjoyed buying, you've treasured throughout the years?
Yeah, you treasure different books at different times for different reasons. Mm. My other treasured association copy is a copy of essays by Fay Weldon called Letters to Alice on First Reading Jane Austen.
Yes.
And I had read it in the library and determined that I had to have a copy. And I saw a little paperback copy in a second-hand bookshop and dismissively thought, oh, it'll do till I can get a hardback. And when I got it home and looked at it properly, on the inside it was dedicated by Fay Weldon.
Goodness.
And had a note underneath by the person who it was dedicated to. And it was R.W.H. And R.W.H. was Ruth Hendry, and she was a Christchurch woman. And for years and years and years, she compiled the cryptic crossword for the listener. And I had done the cryptic crossword from the listener since the mid-70s through to when she stopped compiling them.
Mm.
So, like the Pears Encyclopedia, I didn't know what I was buying when I bought it, and it's a real treasure to have that.
It's a wonderful connection with former owners that come in unexpected ways, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's quite interesting because I find it hard to write my own name in books, with few exceptions these
days.
We
are kind of, it's drilled into us that you mustn't deface books, of course, but yeah.
Well, I went to a series of classes by David Pearson, who wrote a book about the history of the book. And he said, oh, but you must, you know, put your name in the book. It's part of the book's history.
That's right. Yes.
I still find it hard to do.
Yes. Books that are your own, of course, not library books. I just stress that.
Yes. And sometimes the find is good because of sheer avarice. I remember getting the New Yorker compilation of cartoons, a huge book. And I got it upstairs at the university bookshop, and on the way out noticed that they were selling the far inferior paperback copy for more.
Wow.
So that was a little moment of satisfaction in my book buying.
Yes,
off,
which indeed
probably reveals a not quite admirable side of my nature.
No, we all love a bargain. That's human nature.
But I have books that I treasure because they have my great-grandfather's or my great-grandmother's name written in them. So it's the association that makes the book.
Others that have touched those pages.
Yes.
Yeah. And had those same shared experiences with you.
Yes,
Beautiful. So we've lost quite a few bookshops in recent years. I'm just thinking Scribes is probably the most recent. What are your thoughts about that?
My first thought is extreme gratitude that we still have the ones that we do. It must be hard to keep going in these straitened times, and I'm just so grateful that I can still go out on a wet Saturday afternoon and buy books.
Yes.
And there's quite a few opportunities to do so. You can start along South Dunedin, and Weir's usually have quite a few shelves of books, and there's Zodiac books, and then you come to town and there's Downtown Book Exchange and Dead Souls, and then hard to find books.
Yes.
Moving through, you've got Whitcalls, Paper Plus, and then the University Bookshop. So we still do have opportunities. I went to Auckland a couple of years ago, and of my list of bookshops that I used to visit, only three remained.
Goodness. Yeah.
And mostly the little charming suburban second-hand bookshops and book exchanges had just completely disappeared.
Mm. Yeah.
And they certainly have their place as well. So
How does that make you feel to see them go?
Yeah, I just thought of a friend of mine who said, it's not your world any longer, my girl. Oh. But so we are still lucky, but it is devastating because, as we've already talked about, each shop is different and it has its different atmosphere and its different strengths, and it's you're losing the infinite variety.
Mm. And almost a bit of personality, I suppose. Mm. It's encouraging, though. I've seen, for example, the lady in Tiana who's opened a bookshop. Not Tiana, she lives in Manapouri.
A resident is at Manapouri, I would have thought.
Yes, but she's opened a bookshop in her garden. And it's a destination, again, I must go whenever I go to Manapouri.
Yes.
Yeah, so beautiful. So there are people who are still passionate about it, and you know, they
realise it's always encouraging.
Absolutely.
Somebody said to me not long after I got the job as a bookbinder, what do you want to invest your time into learning about that? It's a sunset industry. Books are on their way out. And after a few moments of feeling quite devastated, I suddenly had, wow, that's a really good reason for buying as many as possible while I still can. Which kind of accounts for the 7 cartons in my to-be-read pile.
Absolutely. But I was going to ask you, what do you think? Do you think that's the way of the future?
I wouldn't like to call, but the man who wrote Reading the OED said that electronic media can give you the information, but they can't give you the experience of reading a book. And all I can say is if they stop producing physical books, that I'm not around to experience it, because it's quite a different process to have the object in your hands and have the tactile experience of reading it. I suspect it will be different for younger people who grow up digital, in a digital world. It's even when I'm doing research on something, to be able to have 6 books spread out on the table or around me and be able to flip the through is quite a different process for finding the information, maybe more quickly online. But I have to acknowledge that my conditioning plays a part in that.
There's something sensory about reading a book, though, isn't it? Running your hands.
Well, there is for me, with my background.
Of course, yeah.
The most important thing, though, is that people carry on reading and the stories keep on happening.
Mm.
So if digital media help that happen.
Yeah, it's still a way to tell stories.
Yes.
Indeed.
Mm.
Well, thank you so much, Kathleen. That was wonderful to talk to you.
She's such a gem, and if you want to see some of her work on the 3rd floor of the City Library is the Māori Legends exhibition, and you can see her beautiful supports. And she even chose some of the pictures because we couldn't decide which ones to put.
Oh, great. She's got such good taste and such wonderful memories there to share of growing up with and surrounded by books and bookshops. And that prompts me to say, if any of you have memories of bookshops, or if you've found something interesting in a book when you've perused a secondhand bookshop, do let us know. We want to hear your stories so we can add them to our online record of the history of Dunedin's bookshops.
I'm talking about Ken's for Pens. I thought, oh, that's a name I haven't heard for a while. So, I want to know more about that.
Yes, indeed. Any of those shops that Kathleen mentioned, if you've got memories of those, we really want to hear from you. No memory is too small, by the way. You know, it could be just a line. If you just want to write down a memory and drop that into your local library, or give us a call on 03474 3690, or email us library@dcc.gov.nz. Do so. We'd love to hear from you. And don't forget to tune in next week. We're back at 11 o'clock on Monday, 105.4 FM or 1575 AM. You can hear our repeat broadcast tomorrow night at 10 o'clock, Tuesday evenings. Same details. Or you can download the podcast if you're computer-minded. You can tune in or check in to... I'm just waving at someone through the window. Sorry about that. It's Amanda Mills, who we interviewed a few weeks ago. Yes, you can go to oar.org.nz and download the podcast, Recollections Radio. Now, I've got one more song to play, and this one is dedicated to Kathleen because she's such a lover of books and bookshops. And this one is called In the Bookstore from Rhapsody.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.